So to me, you know, all the advent of the massive increase of sightings of UFOs, it seems so similar to what was written in the Bhagavad Gita thousands of years ago. And also if we look back to the time of Moses and God appearing on the Sinai, I'm just beckoned with the thought. I just can't accept that God travels in a spaceship at the speed of light, because for one, God would be caught in time. As he approaches the speed of light, time slows down, so for him it takes forever to get here. And then all of a sudden he's got to turn around and go somewhere else. It doesn't work.
No, it's not going to happen that way.
But singularity answers all of these problems. You will, when you come to the point of singularity, you eventually see how time is born. It's instantaneously possible to move through any point in time because all of them exist for you. The same moment in singularity.
But how do you merge then the physics and the spirituality
in order to
create singularity?
Once you understand that all inertia or slowing down or resistance is caused by the dual paredness of reality, and that when Jesus said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light, first we think, okay, light should be instantaneous. We should be able to detect all events in the universe in real time by some phenomena. But light, as we know it, can't do it. It's too slow. So what is light pushing up against that's slowing it down? And then we find Einstein's cosmological constant, which is actually the background substratum of space, which produces negative pressure against light. So light has to move through that substratum.
So are you saying that if light didn't have this negative pressure against it, it would go even faster?
It would go way faster. In fact, If it didn't encounter its inertia, light is for us is the ultimate velocity. But there may be a light, and we're gonna get into this, that is truly beyond the light that we know, and that is called singularity. So there I was, kind of stuck. I mean, you need to be able to answer this. You need to be able to prove that singularity exists. Right now, the term singularity is used for black holes, which is the point where both sides of the black hole theoretically touch each other. And they cancel each other out. They become one. Instead of the wave being dual-paired, positive and negative in a spin, they touch. But many physicists argue that that just goes into a microscopic or you go into the micro-universe and that spiral just gets smaller and smaller and smaller towards infinity, and they never touch. Well, the first thing that Paul Dirac discovered that got my attention in this paper by Donald Hodson on Paul Dirac's equation in the Sea of Negative Energy, which was rejected. And Paul Dirac won the Nobel Prize in the 1930s. So you know this man is brilliant. But I was interested in the paper because it was rejected. And I have this strong belief that if physicists today cannot answer the most complex questions, then the most complex problems, both of them, questions and problems, then there must be something in the rejected material that they missed. So when I read the paper, thanks to my friend Luke Gatto, and this paper is available at Zeitlin.net on the internet, Zeitlin.net, if people want to get really deep and read this. The first thing Paul Dirac discovered that really captivated my attention is he saw pairs of atoms, electron anti-electrons, pairs of electrons spinning, and he's actually seeing them being born from high-frequency light waves and then disappearing back into them. So it was the first proof in a quantum model that matter was born from light, the dual pairedness of mass, and then that mass could disappear, which means reduce its mass down to zero and become light again. And that was the first revelation that I saw. The second one that I saw that really got my attention is he actually follows this pair of electron-anti-electron pairs that were stripped off of a proton, so they're not spinning around the heavy core of the atom anymore. And normally, like planets, the electron actually orbits around the solid mass of the proton. It's like a gravity relationship that binds it in that orbit. It's spinning around it in a random orbit. But when you strip it off the proton, it has nothing to orbit around, so it starts to spiral into smaller and smaller orbits, which means, in my theory, its frequency is increasing and its mass is reducing. And it gets to the point where they just disappear. And Paul Dirac said that mainstream physicists said they couldn't see them anymore. They normally, using you know, you take these photographs in what are called bubble chambers, mm-hmm. or spar chambers. And spar chambers were invented when, you know, imagine yourself, you know, 100 years ago when you see a foggy day in San Francisco, you pick up a rock and you throw it through the fog and it leaves a trail in the fog. So physicists realized they could actually take pictures of the motions that particles make in what are called bubble chambers, where you fill the bubble chamber with gas. You explode the subatomic particles in the gas field, and the particles leave trails in the vapor, and you can photograph those trails and follow the wave patterns. The only thing they can't see in a bubble chamber is light, because it has no mass. It passes through solid matter. It doesn't interact with it the way that physical objects do. So they could see the trails that electrons made in the bubble chamber, but when they went really high frequency, they disappeared. They couldn't see them anymore, which means they didn't have mass anymore. So what mainstream physicists said is matter and antimatter met up and annihilated. But Paul Dirac said impossible. He debated it. He said they actually never met up with each other at all, because he did the quantum measurements using, you know, Planck lengths, which is the smallest measurement we have to measure events in the quantum world right now. So he said there's no way they met up, and if they did, there would be an explosion that you could actually photograph, and there was no explosion. So that was the second piece of evidence I found. But then the whole emphasis of Dirac's paper is what is called the equation of the sea of negative energy. Now, this is not to be mixed up with negative spiritual energy or...
like energy zappers, people like that.
Yeah, okay. Nothing like that, or it's not to be equated with what's called dark matter or negative matter.
Okay.
This is a substratum to our entire universe that everything in it is singularly charged, single. It has no antiparticle anywhere inside of that whole substratum. It's all one. And what Dirac found was that when he followed the path of the highest frequency wave particles, which are gamma waves, he found that out of gammas, he could see the birth of electron-anti-electron pairs. And then he saw them go back into it. So when he followed the trail into it, he found that everything in that, where those particles were going, was single. There was no more duality in this substratum, in this field. You can call it positively charged or negatively charged, it doesn't matter. And when you really get that, I knew before I even read the next paragraph, I said, oh my God, this is it. This is what I've been looking for 2 years. This is the place of singleness that all the great masters spoke about, where there is no duality. And if there's no duality, there's no inertia. There's no resistance. That means if you enter it, you have to become single to enter it. And if you actually enter it, you are everywhere in the entire universe in zero time, because there's no resistance. There's no slowing down. And what is so baffling about that is that if you were a spaceship and you entered it, you would become, in essence, God consciousness. You would know all events before and after they happen.
Now, what do you mean by entered it?
Captured
it?
You have to become single to enter it. And I think when Jesus said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be filled with light, Buddha actually, in Buddhism, what you actually do is you cancel out duality, positive and negative thoughts, pleasure and pain. You actually try to overcome all the pairs of opposites, which is what in the great Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you do the same thing. A yogi has to overcome all the different pairs of opposites, hot and cold, positive and negative thoughts.
Good and evil,
good,
right?
Good and evil, all of it. You're going to this single place. Jesus said in the Gospel of Thomas that if you make the above like the below, the male, female, and the female, male, the inside like the outside, and he keeps going through this list of pairs of opposites, and when you make them all one, he said, you will tell the mountain to move and it will move.